This is Up the Road, dedicated to sustaining the Northern California story. I'm Kim Weir. It's a challenge to fully explore the hundreds of miles where the gold rush officially rushed, so you need a plan or a particular focus to guide you. This week we'll head up the road for a look at 1850s mining technologies, because getting the gold was priority one, a process that wasn't nearly as pretty or peaceful as the present-day tour might suggest. The need to get to that gold as fast and efficiently as possible drove technological innovation. The first gold hunters just scratched the surface, sloshing through foothill streams and rivers to pan for that telltale color. Placer miners scooped up dirt, gravel, and sand, and using broad, finely woven Native American baskets or shallow metal pans, swirled the watery slurry round and round, looking for the gold that had already been mined by the forces of nature. Miners quickly discovered they could hit pay dirt faster if they used larger rockers and cradles to process the murky, gold-rich slurry. Another early innovation was the long tom, a small version of the later sluice box, a shallow wooden trough 12 to 14 feet long connected at the lower end to a sieve-covered ripple box where the gold collected. The long tom's upper end was usually inserted into a dam, ditch, or flume to take advantage of gravity to direct water flow. At the end of the day, miners panned the contents of the ripple box. You'll see examples of these technologies at museums throughout the region. Sluicing meant greater productivity, but also required steady supplies of water not naturally available during summer or autumn. So massive wooden flumes, seen everywhere throughout the gold country today, were built to deliver water from year-round mountain streams to dry areas. The cost of flume construction required considerable capital, which encouraged the formation of mining companies, then corporations. Next came hydraulic mining, which used huge rawhide fire hoses and one-ton iron nozzles called monitors to blast pressurized water against whole hillsides, exposing placer gravel and gold, yes, but destroying the land and creating muddy runoff and sediment or slickens that killed stream life and ruined downstream farmland. Outraged landowners, including California's powerful railroad lobby, petitioned the courts for relief and won. Hydraulic mining was banned in 1883, marking the first major U.S. political victory on behalf of the environment. But before it was banned, it created the weirdly beautiful landscape reminiscent of Bryce Canyon in Utah, preserved today at the very remote Malakoff Diggins State Historic Park near Nevada City, which is a great place to pitch a tent or overnight in one of the park's rustic cabins. When the surface gold was gone, the later search went deeper. Hard rock mining, with shafts mechanically hammered into and under mountains, was helped along by the 1860 invention of dynamite. The best place to get the big picture is Empire Mine State Historic Park in Grass Valley. After mining crews working with pickaxes and shovels separated the gold-bearing quartz ore from bedrock, they hauled it to the surface in mule-driven carts. To crush the rock and free the gold, the mule-powered Mexican arrastra was first used, a device similar to a giant mortar with a dragstone pestle. More efficient, though, were the deafening stamp mills that soon loomed up like two-story hotels all around gold rush towns. The piston-like stamps quickly pulverized the stone, then the gold was separated through amalgamation with mercury. At temperatures of 2600 degrees Fahrenheit, the mercury vaporized, and the molten gold was ready for pouring into 80 to 90-pound ingots. The only place today to see a fully functional stamp mill is Sierra City's Old Kentucky Mine, the community's beautifully preserved historic park, with the original machinery still intact. Next time, we'll look at Gold Country hotels in history. Until then, this is Kim Weir for NSPR and Up the Road.